Hong Kong lawmaker goes down on foreign sausage.
The line between satire and fake news eludes many.
Dog meat with a side of controversy.
Cross-dressers? Try cross-hijabbers. Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast, our look at the latest and greatest reporting from our 8 newsrooms in Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Todd Rees, and I'm the managing editor of Coconuts Bangkok.
And I'm associate editor Tara Kamaltanavith.
Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Hey, Tara.
Hey, Todd. Hey, guys.
Well, here we are. We're in the midst of October.
October's the best month ever, according
exactly.
to you.
Exactly. No green jokes. Green Day jokes, please.
We're too late for Green Day jokes.
Well, look, this is episode 18. It is. Which and means we've been at this for some months.
Like four months or something.
I'm a reporter, so math is not my forte, but that's some months. So, you know, since we started doing that, we've joked about this, like, since we started, we record this show on Thursday.
Afternoon.
Late afternoon. And since we started doing this, it seems like pretty much everything amazing happens that we want to do happens to always be on a Thursday.
Right. Whether it be concerts, gigs, your birthday was on a Thursday.
My birthday was on Thursday. So yeah, all these things have been going on Thursdays. And talking about October, I think we've both become very keenly aware of what else is on a Thursday this month.
Halloween. Halloween
is
on a Thursday.
I just looked at a calendar and I think we've made clear that we're Halloween geeks.
Yeah.
And we know there are a lot of haters out there and we're sorry. Well, I mean, we're not, but indulge us.
Let us wear costumes. Like, and apart from cosplay, what other day of the year can you play costumes?
I've always made the sense. Look, I mean, we're in Thailand and people love festivals. There are a few festivals that I don't think are a better fit. I mean, Bangkok, we like to drink, we like to dance, we like to get dressed up, we like to look hot, we like to have fun, and we like scary stuff.
We like things that we do. Horror movies,
things that we
houses.
Like spooky things that go bump in the night. I mean, I've always made the case that Halloween really is like the perfect Thai festival. Before we get to news, we should blow our own horn a bit. We got some news yesterday that...
Yeah, some very good news.
Coconuts had been recognized, had gotten an award from the
Asian Academy Creative Awards, which sounds so close to the Oscars. It's crazy to me a little bit that
it's basically
so
the
close
Academy
to the
Awards Asian.
Of Asia. Yeah, so we won for best single news story / reporting for our video called Planet Plastic, which explores the plastic pollution crisis particularly in Gotland.
It's this kind of idyllic resort island that also has this out-of-control landfill.
Right. This landfill of 50,000, give or take, tons of stinking, rotting garbage that's been accumulating.
You went down there for that. That was before I had rejoined Coconuts. Right. When was that? What was that like?
I don't remember when. I think it was February or March. It was when PM 2.5, like, the pollution, air pollution was at its high. And
earlier this year, the previous round of nasty air.
Right. And I really didn't think, you know, we were like, we're going to go do this story. It's trash, whatever. But when we got there, like not 2 kilometers, 1 kilometer away from the landfill, we were like, whoa. We got to stop and get masks. It was awful. And we were like, there were maggots everywhere. There are no words to describe what it was like to be inside a landfill that massive and that disgusting.
Trashy.
That trashy, yeah. We spent the whole day there.
Now, this was the regional I think national awards, right? So every country has judges who choose one thing in different categories for. So this was Thailand's. Right. Best single news.
Yeah, we won for best reporting in Thailand, which I'm super excited about. And now we're up against like big names, like mainly CNN and BBC and GMA for the continent-wide award that's happening in December. So stay tuned and fingers crossed. Well, speaking of spooky things, there's a lot of creepy, spooky, and weird things happening around our regions this week again. So let's hit the news with Todd with what's happening in Singapore.
What is that?
Was that wrong? Was that bad English?
Just weird.
We're going to keep that.
Well, certainly from the creepy file, 3 weeks after some Singaporeans discovered their most intimate photos being trafficked in a Telegram chat group with more than 40,000 members, four men were arrested this week and charged with conspiring to distribute obscene materials. Two of the men are accused of being admins of the invite-only SG Nazi Lamok group.
Oh, is this the group where that's from the snack with the triangular shape?
Right, yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. This was the name, the rice dish.
Right, which is a metaphor for breast size.
Well, it's served, they look kind of, you know, guys see boobs and everything, so they come in pairs and they're kind of pyramidish shaped. Yeah, those guys. And they were trading, you know, photos of women without their permission.
Without them even knowing.
Yeah, it was kind of like the fappening thing, right?
Yes.
Just like people's random photos. And what was surprising was so many people were in it.
Right.
And it turned out, according to the police, the group was charging people like 30 Singaporean dollars to get accepted into the group chat. It's like $22 US.
Wow, that's not expensive.
Yeah, if you add that up, I mean, if a few tens of thousands of guys were paying that to get into the group, which was also, they were trafficking other illicit things.
Sure.
Vaping and illegal cigarettes.
Sure.
And I think there was some hoeing going on in there, some commercial sex services being offered.
Yeah.
Anyways, so now these four guys are being prosecuted over it, and they face up to 3 months in jail and a fine.
Right. I hope that freaking fine is huge. Well, anyway, on to Hong Kong, where pro-Beijing fireman Junius Ho was booted from a legislative council meeting on Tuesday for making an inappropriate and suggestive comment at the de facto leader of the pro-democracy camp, Claudia Mo, who has a British husband. At one point of the meeting, Ho, who is no stranger to pissing people off, was challenged by Mo. And the paragon of maturity that he is, he responded by suggesting that Mo was, quote, used to eating foreign sausage.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. And this is in the government meeting. This is crazy to me. On top of it being blatantly gross, the comment is a common Cantonese insult for women who have relationships with foreign males, more specifically, intimate relationships. Ho's comment prompted outrage from pro-democracy lawmakers across the committee room, such as from one council member who yelled out that the comment was, quote, harmful to women. After being asked repeatedly if he would apologize for his comment and retract them, Ho refused, saying he was exercising his freedom of expression.
Freedom of expression.
Oh, that's not very pro-Beijing of him, though. He was later escorted out by security. I asked Coconuts Hong Kong associate editor Vicky Wong to give some history of Ho's epic trolling.
So Junius Ho is a very colourful lawmaker who's no stranger to controversy. In 2017, for instance, he once said that legalising same-sex marriage in Hong Kong would lead to the acceptance of bestiality and incest. And he even once said that supporters of Hong Kong independence should be killed mercilessly. Since protests began, he's been at the receiving end of a lot of anger from the pro-democracy side, namely because of his alleged connection with the 721 incident the night of July the 21st, when commuters and pro-democracy protesters returning home from a rally on Hong Kong Island suddenly found themselves attacked by men in white shirts armed with like metal rods and bamboo sticks. Ho has been accused of being connected to that incident because he was subsequently filmed shaking hands with a lot of these white-shirted men, saying, you know, that he supported them. Therefore, he's not a figure that people particularly like.
Yes, yes, I know. It's been months of protests and hard news coming out of Hong Kong since protests started over the controversial extradition bill. But, there is a but here. There is one silver lining this week. The people of Hong Kong have been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for risking their lives and security to stand up for freedom of speech and basic democracy. So congrats, Hong Kong. Your voices are being heard around the world.
Well, just in time for Halloween, Muslim authorities in Indonesia are alarmed by a trend of men slipping into burqas and niqabs to infiltrate areas reserved only for women.
Hmm. I don't think they're doing it for Halloween purposes, though.
Oh, well, we'll get to that. Meet the Cross Hijabbers, a loose-knit online community of men and boys posting photos of themselves peering coquettishly from behind face and body-covering garments from inside places forbidden to men. Cross Hijabbers is the hashtag they use to post photos from inside women's restrooms and reserve sections at the masjid. Now, is it a genuine expression of gender identity? The global phenomenon of hetero dudes who just dig wearing chick clothes? Or just boys hacking cultural conventions to penetrate the forbidden world of women? I asked Jakarta Associate Editor Nadia Hamid for an explanation.
We actually find it hard to know about their real motives because they were so secretive up until they got exposed. There was a Twitter thread that's been going viral since early this week, exposing them and calling them as "the end is near, people are getting crazy" or something like that. And actually, based on their social media posts, it's pretty apparent that most of them were not in it for peeping women in toilets or any other places, because they mostly post selfies or outfit of the day, wearing hijab or niqab or face cover, and usually paired with dresses. So it could be possible that they identify as straight males, but they find something really comforting about being covered up. And maybe some of you know already, but we're now in the climate of paranoia surrounding LGBT people in Indonesia, and the fact that these cross hijabbers wear face veils actually afford a layer of protection for these men to freely express their gender identity without fear of being exposed or getting social or legal consequences. And we actually have had cross-dressing celebrities over the years. Most of them were famous comedians such as Tessie. But in recent years, it became more difficult to express one's identity freely in many parts of Indonesia. So while cross hijabers are relatively new in terms of media exposure, that may be a reaction to all the homophobia lately.
Well, while some have defended the cross hijabers' right to expression, others say they threaten the privacy and religious rights of Muslim women. Either way, the clerical authorities aren't having it. Muhammadiyah, one of Indonesia's and the world's largest Islamic organizations, has called on the police to investigate and even prosecute the burqa-wearing boys. The group says they're either breaking the law or they're deviants in need of religious counseling. Since the story broke, a lot of people have scrubbed their social media profiles of any cross hijabber references.
Well, you know, a funny story. I've actually dated a straight cross dresser before. But it would be annoying because sometimes he would steal my bras. But that was it. We didn't last very long. Imagine this. You're walking along a street in Bali's Buleleng district and you're hungry. So you stop by a small food stall.
I can imagine this.
Yeah. You ask the vendor what he's selling, and the reply shocks you. Makes you think of your childhood bestie, and maybe you get really sad. Can you guess what the vendor is selling, Todd? And here's a hint. I didn't have a lot of human friends growing up.
I'm going to say it has to be hamster.
It's dog. While eating dog meat is widely frowned upon in many parts of the world, some people still chow down on it in Bali, where it is actually legal to consume dog, but it is illegal to trade dog meat.
So I can eat my own dog.
Yeah.
But like, you can't sell me your dog to
right.
eat.
I Got can't it. Go to the market and be like, you want fufu?
Got it.
Restaurants and vendors even hang up signs that specifically indicate that they sell dog meat. Here's Bali Associate Editor Shenny to talk more about the cultural attitude towards eating dogs.
So from the reports that we've done over the years, we found that the Balinese in general are very opposed to eating dog meat. Dog eating on the island represents a small section of the community, and the practice itself is believed to have been brought by a small group of ethnic minority who came to the island around the 70s to work in the hospitality industry. On the other side of that, however, a 2017 investigation that Coconuts did show us that restaurants and stalls located in busy urban neighborhoods didn't even try hiding the fact that they were selling dog meat. There's still plenty of demand, and this is despite regional bylaw banning the dog meat trade. Though officials are saying that they're stepping up enforcement, it doesn't seem like the practice is going to stop at any time soon.
A livestock official this week said that there are at least 10 food stalls still selling dog meat in the district north of Bali. This prompted officials to step up enforcement of the illegal meat trade ban. What does the extra enforcement entail exactly? Well, not much. It includes giving a warning letter to the owners of the food stall, as well as providing training and compensation for those affected by the ban. Because, though it is frowned upon, stopping these vendors from selling meat also means cutting their means of livelihood.
Just a few years ago, Chinese state media cooed about North Korea's Kim Jong-un being declared the sexiest man alive. Another time, it was Iran's Fars news agency which plagiarized a story saying that most white rural Americans would rather hang out with then-President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad instead of Barack Obama. A satire can be hard for those with low reading comprehension, especially when the online outrage meter is always pegged to 11 and boiling with disinformation. Enough so that there's a subreddit followed by nearly 400,000 people dedicated to butthurt over misunderstood articles from The Onion, which for 20 years has billed itself as America's finest news source. Dun, dun, dun. Thus, it didn't come as a surprise to many when a former Malaysian police inspector general took to Twitter to praise a year-old article from the site declaring the CIA had issued a posthumous apology after clearing Osama bin Laden of involvement in 9/11. The story was complete with a bogus apology attributed to agency chief and head torturer Gina Haspel, apologizing for taking the life of a loving husband, father, businessman, and highly effective community organizer. What did puzzle folks, though, was the fact that no attempt at explaining the concept of satire seemed to have any impact on Musa Hassan, a former federal police chief, who demanded the U.S. government formally repudiate the story if it wasn't true. With every attempted explanation, he dug deeper into his position, demanding The Onion retract the story and calling the right to write untrue things satirically an illogical freedom. It was enough to inspire a Malaysian satire site to publish a story saying he had been cleared by the CIA of masterminding any plots because he was essentially too stupid if he couldn't separate fact from fiction. Fortunately for that piece's author, Malaysia is on the verge of repealing its very silly fake news law. So that's the news. That's at least the news from our newsrooms around the region, though with one notable exception. We didn't talk about anything in Thailand, in Bangkok there. Mm-hmm. Well, having set the stage now with dog meat and satire, you know, we can talk a bit about what happened this week.
Yes. Do you want to talk about how you received the tip and how the story even came to us?
Okay. So fine. Some backstory, some behind the headlines a bit first.
Should we talk about what the story is and then go into that, or?
Yeah, well, okay, let's actually do this from the perspective of how the sausage gets made, so to speak, which is
quite literally.
People send us stuff.
Yeah.
Someone I know in the animal welfare community sent me a link and said, hey, you got to see this. This is crazy. And it was a link posted about a French expat in Buriram province in the northeast. He has this shelter. He solicits donations. He presents himself as, you know, as a righteous dude who's helping animals.
Yeah. He calls himself, you know, an animal lover. He says he does it all for the love of animals.
And he very well, I mean, he probably is.
Yeah, he probably, like, when I talked to him, he seemed genuine, but we'll get there.
What did the post say?
So the post accuses this man, should we say his name?
Michael Chor.
He's French. He's French.
So we'll just.
So yeah. This post alleges
in
Michael.
In very strident terms, called him Dr. Death.
Yes.
Said he's killing dogs alleges that he's killing dogs
illegally.
That
without, because he's not a vet. He's not a doctor. He's not licensed or anything. He's a fake doctor.
These dogs don't have rabies, they said. Or at least we don't know. He doesn't know.
These dogs have never been tested. These dogs just, quote unquote, exhibits signs of rabies, which he spells wrong like so many times.
So basically, I mean, he was being accused of putting these dogs to death without the medical qualifications necessary to really determine, and basically making these medical decisions without the medical background to do so.
Playing doggy god.
And someone else sent us a slew of videos and images which had been purportedly shared by him and his rescue shelter. And it's like 22, 23 photos, posts,
and videos
of him basically putting dogs to death.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we saw that. And so our first call, of course, was to try to find out if this was on the radar of any local authorities there.
Right.
So you called the local livestock department.
I called
to see if this place had been, if they're aware of this, is on the radar. Right.
So this guy I reached at the Bowie Run Livestock Department said, yeah, they are aware of it, mostly because of Facebook and online videos, and they are investigating.
He'd gotten complaints.
Right. He's gotten complaints, and they're investigating with a legal expert about what this guy's doing wrong and collecting evidence in order to perhaps make a criminal case against him. Yeah.
So once we got confirmation that this was on the radar of the Livestock Department, they were investigating, then we felt sort of armed enough to then go talk to Michael himself.
Michael, yeah.
And give him a chance to respond to what's been accused, what's been said, get his side of the story. So
So we call Michael, and he presents himself as this genuine guy who loves animals. He doesn't work. He was like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a veterinarian.
Right. He acknowledges him. He admits that he isn't a qualified veterinarian.
Yeah. And he keeps on repeating the sentence. I don't know if it's like, you know, translation, but he keeps on saying, I'm not working. I'm just volunteering, and I'm just the face of the organization.
Yeah, well, whether does the guy actually have a work permit may be an issue. I mean, who knows
where
he's
coming
from.
That's why he's saying it.
But, I don't know.
But he's like, I don't euthanize dogs. I don't inject dogs. I only rescue them. But
he told you he's rescuing the dogs. They do get sick. But he's not a veterinarian, and he makes it sound like he's not really calling the shots there either.
Right. He's like, I'm not the manager. I'm just the face. But he does say that, and he quote says, we don't euthanize dogs here. We don't.
Right. Which then, 22 videos, which appear.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not just I can say we always want to be measured and accurate in what we're saying. But it's not just that they appear to show him euthanizing dogs. In the videos, you can hear him saying things like, this dog has rabies.
You will no longer bite anyone.
And that he's putting them to sleep.
Yeah.
And then he gives them an injection, which he told you, Beepo.
And let's talk about what one of these videos are. It's like one of the videos that really stood out to me was there was this dog, his name is Beepo. As Michael.
Well, this was the one that was in the post. This was in the original post. They had saved this video of
Beepo. And this video was actually in Michael's organizations, which is called the Sound of Animals Facebook page. So it was public, like to everyone to see. And Beepo is like this big, medium-sized street dog who was like running around. At first he was running around, and then like Michael goes up to him and he's like, oh, you're a good dog. You won't bite me. And then Beepo like gets excited and starts jumping, and Michael like straights up, like he jumps up, right? And Michael straights up slaps
the dog. He like bitch slaps the dog to the ground.
This dog like falls and rolls over because it was that hard of a slap.
Yeah.
And then the video cuts to Michael like stroking the dog, saying like, it's gonna be okay, what's gonna whatever. And then it cuts to two employees holding this dog down while it's screaming. And Michael also there, like kind of holding him down with one hand and injecting Beepo with the other hand. And as soon as he injects Beepo like shoots up, screams, run around, and he does this like crazy dog, like crazy frenzy thing. And then he eventually like falls down and lies motionless.
Yeah, dog looks dead.
The dog looks dead.
This is just a reasonable perspective from watching the video.
Yeah. So I hit him back and I was like, there are evidence of you doing that. And I point particularly to the Beepo video. And he said that that was an emergency case, that the owner, he was biting three people at that point, and the owner asked him to inject Beepo with this medicine, which he said he didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, the point is he says he injected the dog with something he didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
Okay,
but and he then said he got it from the vet, and the dog is now dead.
Right, but then there also are dozens of other videos of him injecting dogs with something that kills them.
Right, and I asked him about that, and he kind of denies it. It's wishy-washy, but he does say he turns all the dogs he rescues that's sick over to the vets.
Right.
Yeah, he will not say he euthanizes dogs at any point.
Well, no, and at the end of the day, it's, you know, we're not an investigative agency, and we're not a... Our job is just to collect information to present it to people. And so, you know, I can't, and I wouldn't claim to be able to make any conclusion on what's going on, besides what a reasonable person would see from the videos and the claims made that seem to tell a different story than he was offering.
Right.
And at this point, it's one of those things that's like, we've done our part, and we can only leave it in the hands of
the legal department.
Well, you know, hopefully, whatever comes of this investigation, and to see if anything comes out either way. And for us, that means following up on the story.
Absolutely.
Not just for our readers' sake, but also if his name is cleared and it turns out that nothing happened here, then
we
absolutely
would
we would want to let people know that.
Yeah.
So we put the better part of a day into that story, and we referenced, now this is where the satire and the dog meat comes into this. Oh, and but did we mention that? He says he rescues these dogs from the dog meat trade.
Yeah, from the Cambodia dog trade, right. which means, you know, these dogs are being traded to be eaten, similar to what we just talked about earlier in Bali.
Right, and so I threw away, we're coconuts and we like to be weird, I threw in a reference to something I wrote 5 years ago.
5 years ago, first of all.
When there were a lot of stories we were covering about the dog meat, there were a lot of crackdowns going on, and there was this one just particularly egregious, crazy, it was an insane story about these guys arrested pretty much for torturing this dog.
Mm-hmm.
But in the course of the story, they discuss sort of what they were doing to the dog.
Right.
And it was this very detailed account of how they were preparing it
to be eaten.
And so at the time, I remember I went to some recipe site and I got a background. Oh, no, I think it was like a Google Docs, like recipe card template.
Yeah.
So I took that at the background. And then I wrote out, like, from their perspective,
how to make a dog meal.
How to cook coconut milk dog.
I'm not going to speak for you, but it is, evidently satirical.
It's satire.
I know, but I don't want to come on here and just, like, us be defensive and say everyone's dumb. Even if that's true. So these guys, I think they were Cambodian construction workers. They had buried this dog, so he couldn't move. They tied a rope around its neck, and they starved it. They didn't feed it. It was half buried in this ground for several days, and they kept feeding it, like, sweetened coconut milk. And this is they explained all this to the police, right?
Right.
So I'll read an excerpt from the... Now, I admit, I have been accused of going a bit dark before. So I wrote this recipe card. Step one, find docile soy dog and build trust with animal. Time invested here will pay off in spades later, as its condition will be more easily managed. Step two, starve the animal a while to weaken it. It's key to find the right balance between weak and defenseless, while also maintaining some of that delicious meat on its bones.
Just right now, I don't know how, like, personally for me, I can't read that and not see it as This is a news website. It's satirical.
Well, we haven't gotten to the reaction yet. So this is a five-year-old...
article.
Yeah, five-year-old
It's like
article.
Making fun of Family Guy. Or like being mad at Family Guy.
Step three. Prepare a roughly dog-shaped hole in the ground. Place dog in hole, at least up to his flank and shoulders. Step four. Leave bowls of coconut milk for the dog. Don't worry. Starvation will do the work here for you. That dog will eat it. Continue for 30 days. It just goes on from there, right? I don't even want to read the rest. After our breaking news account of these alleged atrocities committed against animals, against real animals in Buriram province hit the web, it was only a matter of an hour or two before I had gone to the gym and you messaged me and this was blowing up in one of the online animal community.
I didn't even see this post until our readers started sending me
I don't want to sound defensive and certainly we have the advantage that right now, you know, we're given our version of this here. But I think this is an interesting to understand how this happens. So, I mean, the fact that 5 years ago this ran and no one really seemed upset by it.
Yeah, I can't believe you had no backlash then. It's like, do you...
I think the world's a very different place than it was 5 years ago.
Well, do you think people are angrier or people are just more
aware? I think people are very sensitive to there's so much awful... So much this late. I don't want to say triggered because then I sound like one of these like outright like speech Nazis or something.
Yeah.
But people are hypersensitive and I don't know. I mean, part of me, I feel that our ability to distinguish between something that represents an awful idea versus an actual awful idea, you know, have kind of eroded.
Right.
So anyway, so someone posted on this forum, they said, Coconuts Bangkok News thinks it's funny to make fun of a dog being buried, tortured and starved so it can be made into coconut dog soup. They even posted their own recipe of the soup. Horrible. Shame on you, Coconuts Bangkok. And writers Todd Reese and Tara Kamal Vatanovith.
Yeah. And called us.
Well, I mean, we got some reading comprehension issues off at the start there. Like, you had... nothing to do with this.
Right. But also it's like, this is a very important story about dogs being euthanized and that's what you got out of it. You know, for me, I'm not being defensive. I see where she's coming from. I see where someone who is really passionate about working this field can be on the uneasy side of how we presented the recipe. But to make that whole... To like bring that up.
I think we're struggling to find the place where, look, a lot of hurtful things are said in the world and sort of our sense of what's normal and acceptable has really come under fire.
Right.
And a sense that there's a lot of people who no longer agree with us about like these things are okay and those things are not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm reading something and it's like, is this going to be okay now? Mm-hmm. Is it now going to be okay to make jokes about torturing animals?
Mm.
And I get that. Like, I am sensitive to that. But that's not what this was.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to be a martyr and talk about shooting the messenger, but I would say that, yeah, we didn't make the world an awful place, just like we didn't bury this dog in our job of trying to, like, hold up a mirror to the awfulness of the world. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I steered away. I've
well,
been
I gave you my heartfelt advice, right? Normally, I don't read the comments.
Yeah.
Because I've been doing reporting and publishing stuff and having an audience for close to two decades. And before Facebook, before social media, I used to get emails. Used to save some of them. I thought someday I'm going to publish a coffee table book of just these awful, awful emails.
Yeah.
Calling me, things you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
Over something that was like, I'm just reporting what happened.
Right.
So I advised you. I said, hey, look, don't read it.
Yeah.
Don't respond to it because you can't win. Right. You can't win online.
Right. No.
But I didn't take my own advice because, you know, I was thinking about this and it just seemed like, if there's anything, some civil discourse, like there should, I mean, I did feel these, I did feel these people were wrong and that there was going to be some value to trying to clear this up. So I did write a couple comments.
Do you want to read some of your reply? The winning reply?
Okay. So I wrote a comment and then, a few minutes later, the original poster did delete the thread.
Because you said.
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I think that, well, let me read the reply. I said that I totally respected her opinion.
Yeah, we all do.
Very glad to hear the recipe angered her and everyone else. I mean, that was the intent.
Yeah, it should.
That was the idea, and that I was equally angry 5 years ago about the actual harm inflicted on that animal. And that's why I came up with the faux recipe, to highlight this absurd, banal cruelty that humans inflicted on that dog.
And how it's been normalized in so many communities.
Sure, sure. I mean, and at the time that I wrote this 5 years ago, there was a much bigger, the dog meat trade was a really big deal. I continued, I said, just like the actual alleged cruelty visited upon dozens of actual dogs that we broke the news on in that story Wednesday, which I noted was an undertaking of no small effort. Okay, this is a little self-aggrandizing, but true, done out of our conviction to stand up for the most vulnerable members of the society.
Right.
I continued, I said, every person upset by it is a good indicator. But I said, I'm a little puzzled that folks would morally equate calling out an awful thing with the actual awful thing.
Yeah. And to that, I did take your advice, and because I was on a high from winning that award, and I was like, I don't want to be brought down by people right now.
Yeah.
And
well, because it never ends. It never ends.
And it becomes a
distraction. It interferes with doing what we're really committed to doing, which is being fair and good reporting. And if you are constantly second guessing yourself because of some comment that someone made, it's very corrosive.
Right.
And it's very, I mean, yes, we need to listen to feedback, but not every comment online that's just hostile.
Right. And as someone,
and everyone's outraged.
Right. And someone on the other side of the table, like, you know, reading the comments, it is not to like, you know, discourage anyone from doing anything. But when you, like you said, we did this with the conviction to seek justice for these vulnerable animals.
I know people don't understand. That context is lost, especially
a
social media feed.
So,
again, people are just, it's like if you throw up a ball of outrage, everyone's going to smack it around.
Right. So the last time that happened to me, like when I first started out being a reporter, I wasn't used to that kind of hostility yet. It kind of sent me spiraling because I didn't really have a team there, no one there to consult me or help me to go through it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a bad person. I was convinced, even though like I had my morals, you know, so it just makes you feel, for me, it just, for someone, I don't know, for someone who that at that point wasn't so confident in herself, it just threw me off.
Well, it's difficult because
it was heartbreaking.
I think essential to what we do is having a sensitivity and empathy and some self-second guessing.
Right.
You know, there needs to be some self-criticism to keep ourselves honest.
Right.
But also kind of an openness and empathy to the world to be able to report it in a fair way. And so that is very challenged because, we read these things and they really suck to read.
Right. And it's like we're on the same, and that's something I wrote to her too. I was like, we're on the same side. Like, I'm with you. Like, at that, I admitted that I was wrong. I saw what I did was wrong. And I said, dude, we're on the same side. You know what her reply to me was? Don't call me dude.
Yeah.
I was literally like, this is where we end. This is where we stop.
Well, I closed my message. I said that, look, I mean, I understand that this doesn't persuade you and I can live with that. And, you know, I would continue to do what I do to call attention to, we would continue what we do to call attention to suffering and all of its stripes.
But what I will say to that is that because she deleted it, it was kind of like, you want to call us out publicly, but you don't want to respond to our response publicly.
Well, I thought that we were reasonable. Yes, I would have liked it instead if instead of just deleting the whole thing after inflaming a bunch of people, Yeah, you took a minute to just edit it and say, hey, yeah, this was more complicated than I thought, or right, maybe I was half wrong or something.
Or not even, but just taking the time to acknowledge that there are different perspectives than yours.
It was ultimately kind of an abdication. It's like you started something and then you kind of, you quit it. You kind of abdicated responsibility, right, by just deleting it. I would have liked to have seen a different response. But I felt that there was some discourse that went on through the, apart from all the people saying that you and I should rot in hell, just as if we had buried and killed this dog.
Yeah.
Apart from that, there was some discourse and there were some people who, so I don't know, I felt like, and at the end of it, I felt like it was an okay day. It was a good day for, yeah, internet discourse.
Yeah. But that for like, and I, what I really want everyone to get out of this story is that rabies happen. It's an epidemic disease that is going around. But when that happens, dogs are supposed to be quarantined and kept apart, and they have to be checked. They have to be, you know, people have to like confirm that they have rabies. They just can't be put,
yeah,
down.
And there's a lot of reasons. There were allegations also made about the quality of care at this shelter, right, and whether, you know, these animals were in unhealthy conditions for other reasons.
Right. And right.
And yes, there is no easy blood test for rabies, but yeah, you're supposed to, there's other ways to handle,
right,
it. Instead of this guy who, look, he's posting videos to his social media profile where he's saying a lot of sort of sad things about these dogs. And then below that is a link to like his PayPal, and he's soliciting donations,
right, which has been blocked a few times, apparently, according to him.
That seemed a bit questionable, right, the ethics of that.
Right.
Anyways, yeah, it's something that comes up, and
I'm proud
I've
of
certainly,
our work.
You know, I've accumulated enough thick skin without losing my sensitivity that I try to handle it and roll with it and be compassionate to how people are feeling, even if I find it completely unreasonable,
yeah,
and ill-based. At the end of the day, what matters to me is that the story we published was about a real thing that hadn't,
yeah,
been reported elsewhere, and could help contribute to improving in some small way
the welfare of these
some
dogs.
Animals' welfare.
I really hope that's the ultimate thing people took away from that article, because I'm very proud of the work we put into it.
And if you are interested in cooking coconut milk dog, you can find the article linked in Wednesday's story. I kept my powder dry on the fact that as someone who has not actually eaten animals in 30 years, that recipe really didn't sound much different than all the other animals. All you people eat.
Tots a vegetarian.
So yeah.
So that recipe.
There's that.
Isn't even
yeah, I get it. I don't want to eat dogs, but you know, maybe all the other things you eat aren't too cool either.
Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. You know, milk dog, dog meat and all. Thank you for being here with us and dissecting it with us. Oh no, that sounds bad. Like dissecting a dog.
Oh, I like that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for tuning in.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Coconuts Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye.
Apple Podcasts, Google.
Ushka.
I think it's pretty much everywhere now.
Yeah,
and, you know, it really helps spread the word if you write a two-word review. I'm trying to think what love it. That's the shortest review I can think of.
Love.
Or just rad, one word.
Yeah.
Some kind of review.
Hit up with your thoughts.
Helps more people to hear the podcast, helps us, and we appreciate that. Stay tuned to coconuts.co for the updates on these stories and everything else new and fun going on. And we will see you next week.
From Coconuts, Bangkok, my name is Tara Kamol-Davis.
And I'm Todd Reese.
Special thanks this week to our audio engineer, Indigo Mantagon, at Noise Studio, where you can record your podcasts, interviews, voiceovers, or even get your soundtracks produced.
The Coconuts Podcast is written and produced by Todd Reese and Tara Kamol-Vatanovith. Our executive producers are Byron Perry and Chad Williams.
Thank you for tuning in, and see you next week.